through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
The pitch to Fraley, and it's well outside. It's a walk-off walk on opening day 2021. Incredible.
Never in doubt, Curtis. Never in doubt. Am I right?
Never.
Am I right, Curtis?
No one would dare send their show email before the eighth inning.
No one at all. Curtis would do that.
I would never.
You are
I would never start Kevin Gausman on my fantasy team and cheer in the group text as he's mowing down the Mariners through the first seven innings.
I would really like to know that that's not true.
The Mariners pull off the comeback win. By the way, let me run you guys through this hour. Jake and Stacy brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He's Jake Heaps. Curtis Rogers on the board. I'm Stacy Ross. Marco Gonzalez, normally a model of consistency, gives up three home runs, walks three, and was tallied with five earned runs through six innings. Meanwhile, Cy Young Gausman, a.k.a. Sandy Koufax Gausman, a.k.a. Kevin Gausman, is lighting it up. Worth noting here that Curtis Rogers, comma, a traitor, had Gausman in his fantasy baseball lineup. Shame on you, Curtis.
Look, the best possible outcome could have happened last night. Kevin Gausman was amazing, and the Mariners won.
I just don't know why you would do that.
Why would you do that?
I mean, it's not like Gausman.
I'm looking for a win here.
The thing was, the hard part for me is watching the first part of this game is the fact that Kevin Gausman, he's not some bastion of elite starting pitching in his career. He is not somebody that you would look at and go, oh, oh boy, we got to face Kevin Gausman to open our season. And he was just mowing people down.
He was fantastic, to his credit. And to San Francisco's credit, they were also great outside of, I think, an error with keeping the Mariners at bay, right? Dylan Moore ends up getting a sac fly for a run. That was pretty much all the Mariners could manage to do.
Hey, don't forget about Kyle Seager hitting that double in the what was it, the fourth? I mean, you can't leave that out.
Jake cannot stop praising Kyle, team dad, Seager.
Yeah, plenty of
dad energy. Anyways.
Gotta have it.
Then the Giants go to the bullpen, and the comeback begins. You have former Mariner Matt Weisler comes in, Ty France singles, Crawford scores, Taylor Trammell making his MLB debut, draws a walk, the first of two that he draws, Haniger scores, and on and on and on it goes. Of the 81 pitches San Francisco's bullpen threw, only 39 were strikes. They had nine walks as a team. The Mariners complete the comeback in the 10th. With this walk-off walk by Jake Fraley. Let's play it one more time. Cut three.
Infield in, runners all around, nobody out. Three balls and a strike. The pitch to Fraley, and it's well outside. It's a walk-off walk on opening day 2021. Incredible. An amazing comeback for the Mariners, who were down 5-0 going into the seventh. They rallied back, and they win it 8-7, the final score, in 10 innings on opening day 2021.
Man, that was such a fun opening day game. I mean, it was seven innings of straight pain and frustration and going, man, this is such a letdown. To then you see them take a different approach, starting really in the seventh and mostly in the eighth in terms of their patience at the plate, taking advantage of, Stacey, as you said, a bullpen by the San Francisco Giants that just really fell apart. Absolutely. And you look at their ability to stay patient at the plate. That was really the key in all of this. But I love the fact that this group, it just really looked like they came out flat. Whether it was nerves, anxiety, you have a lot of young players that wanted to come out and make a statement. You just saw a lot of bad decisions at the plate in terms of, you know, when to swing, how to swing. But then it really started to come together later in the game. And I just love the fact that they had fight, right? They had fight. They stayed in it. They clawed their way back into this game. And I don't know, texted in to 710-710, our text line here. How did you finish watching the game? Because it was just me and Brooke staying up late last night in our bed, just high-fiving and pumped up to watch, you know, that literal walk-off run right there that walk-off win. And I think that when you talk about the Mariners and everything that they're going to go through, it is going to be up and down. It's going to be a year that's not going to be a straight line, you know, perfectly, you know, linear path to growth. But, you know, you had some great moments. I mean, let's go to cut number one. I mean, Dylan Moore, you started to get, you know, guys on base. How about this crucial hit by Dylan Moore in the eighth to get things really
one out? Here's the pitch on the way. Swinging a line drive down the right field line. A fair ball in toward the corner. Here comes France on to score. Seager rounding third. He will score. Around to third goes Trammell. Moore in at second with a two-run double. It's a one-run ball game. It's now the Giants 6 and the Mariners 5.
David Moore quietly having a monster game. Sack fly getting in Evan White. Then hitting that two-run double there, started off by two patient at-bats, you know, Taylor Trammell, you know, really starting it off. And you look at, you know, cut number five, Scott Servais, Stacey, when he put the credit to the game, he gave it to the rookie who's making his opening debut. That's really kind of the turning point of the game in his mind.
For me, if the game could be summarized in one at bat tonight, it was probably Taylor Trammell's at bat. He had the 9-pitch walk in the bottom of the eighth against some really tough lefty, laid off some good sliders, ended up drawing a walk. And it's crazy how does one at bat, but really pivotal at bat in the ball game for a guy making his major league debut, about as cool. It was the other side of the pillow, I guess they used to say there. It was great to see, and a lot of good at-bats up and down the lineup tonight. Not a ton of hits, but we made them work, that's for sure.
Appreciate Servais saying, too, crediting that he's a lefty makes that a little trickier for Trammell. That patience was good to see. Look, you didn't see, like, the grand slam from Taylor that you were thinking, oh, storybook opening night for this rookie with his fiance, his family there. But also, you were a huge role in them pulling this off by doing exactly what Scott Servais likes to see his guys do, right? Controlling the zone, making sure that you're patient with it, being smart with your plate appearances. Trammell did that. Fraley did that with his walk-off. Also, credit to Haniger. Haniger gets his first hit in a long while, and also, cut number two makes the sliding catch to keep the game tied.
The Savage sets right by the chin. Deals. Swinging a lazy fly ball right field. Haniger having to pick up some speed near the line. He slides in. Mitch Haniger makes the catch to end the top of the 10th. What a play.
I feel like you could see a little bit of a smile cracking on Haniger's face where he's kind of like, oh, cheers feel good now. Like, this is nice having fans back. But you know who we're not crediting? And I can't say this enough. The unsung hero of the night, Wu Fan. We aren't crediting Wu Fan enough.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. Woo Fan, and I talked, I got Nathan Bishop, who is on the Dome and Bedlam podcast, was talking about this, and I was like, yes, Nathan summarized it so perfectly. Woo Fan was out here in, like, freezing temperatures, cheering her tail off, and was being panned for it. Good on you, Woo Fan. Good on you. I go for Brent Stecker of 710 Sports saying, when Woo Fan started really wooing, the game turned around, and like it or not, you're stuck with it because this is tied to the comeback, and we believe in luck and superstition in sports. And do not stop, Woo Fan. Do not stop.
I mean, anybody who's going to the game last night, that's their first live sporting experience in this town in like 2 years.
Woo your head off.
Yeah, you're going to cheer like crazy. Shout out to her for bringing it all game long last night, and hey, maybe it did turn the tide.
I'm crediting her with minimum two runs.
It could be, and I just want everybody to know out there, I'm in desperate search of Woo Fan. So if you can help me, your efforts in locating her would be greatly appreciated.
Now,
I want to personally thank her for last night's win. And Stacey, I am actually surprised. Were there literal people panning her?
Yeah.
Is this just a few people that you're seeing that you're generalizing now everybody, or is this a lot of people?
Woo Fan was like a trending topic in Seattle Twitter for a while. Like, Woo Girl was trending.
Okay.
Because she was, to be fair, it was very noticeable, which is impressive considering she was masked up, presumably, and screaming in the middle of a ballpark. The fact that there were 9,000-ish fans there in a sellout crowd helps, right? You're going to hear one person's voice over the others, but, like, honestly, props.
I didn't even notice Woo Fan until my wife had pointed out Woo Fan to me. Because I was just so dialed into the game, I apparently was blocking out all other noise. Because as soon as she addressed it to me, she was like, "Wow, good for her, good for this person who is, you know, yelling their heart out." And I was like, "I'm sorry, what?" And so I started paying attention to it. You know what? Like, if you're going to get on her, then you should be mad at the rest of the other fans that were there that weren't cheering on her level. If you're not going to be on her level and you're going to have the noise be, you know, deafening where it's only just her, then that's on you. That's 100% on the people that were there. I love the passion. I love the energy. I don't care what it sounds like or where it comes from. I thought it was awesome. And, you know, she brought it. When it was the seventh, when it was the eighth, I mean, she was rolling.
There was a while where rolling. My own throat was hurting just thinking about, like, oh, my God, the energy to do this. But you know what? Props. Good on you. And, Curtis, you said it best, right? We're all woo girl.
We were all woo girl.
We were all woo girl tonight. It was all exciting.
You know what? The texters, they got me. You're right. This is all 100% selfish in terms of my search for Woo Fan. The 253 says Jake just wants Woo Fan to show up for his ninja run. I absolutely do. But the problem is that I don't have much time because it's today.
It's today. What time is it today?
Ladies and gentlemen, the run is today.
Are you nervous?
Absolutely, I am nervous. I woke up today and can't stop shaking. My hands are sweaty. I'm ready to do this thing, but I'm very, very nervous, but I'm excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, so I can't wait to, you know, hit the course, but Woo Fan, Woo Girl, whoever it is who's out there cheering your heart out, I would greatly appreciate it if you were there for me.
Now, how are you going to prove that it's her though?
I don't know.
That's the thing. Are you going to have people try to woo and then match it?
Yes. Once I meet them or once I see them, then I'll have them do it.
Now, Jake, are Curtis and I allowed to come watch you do this ninja course, or are you purposely keeping us from it?
Yeah, because, I mean...
I'm just saying.
We got nothing going on this
We have
afternoon.
Nothing going on today, if you want to invite us. No pressure.
You know, it's all good. It's all good. I think that you guys coming, it's really not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Partly also because I don't want to hear you guys talk trash about me the entire time.
So, we're going to do it anyway.
What's more likely to happen? Jake invites us to American Ninja Warrior, or Jake and I meet Brian? Text that in to the text line 710-710, because I feel a little left out here not being able to go see Jake run the course and having never met Brian. We were promised Brian yesterday.
No, you could have met him. You went to the bathroom when he came in.
Stacey, we... All three left the stadium at the exact same time.
No, I think that at one point you went to the bathroom, I'm pretty sure.
No.
So you couldn't see him, but he was there. More importantly, it is 11:15, guys. So sorry we have to end this conversation. That means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Question number one, we are just under 4 weeks away from the NFL draft. Tyler Lockett signed that extension a couple days ago. So what are the chances Seattle trades a veteran player for picks over the next 4 weeks?
I would say slim to none. There is really not anybody on this list now that you have at this stage that I would think is a good idea to trade away and to go and acquire picks. You're going to trade Bobby Wagner? Going to trade Jamal Adams at this point? Could you get stuff in return for them? Yes, but does it leave big holes in your defense? Absolutely. And at this stage in free agency, you're not going to get a massive return in terms of guys out there on the open market that you can replace those two players with adequately. So I don't think that you're at a position right now where even if you wanted to, you would be able to recoup that talent back in draft picks or in players that are open on the free agent market right now. And I just don't think it's a good idea to begin with. I've always been the proponent of, I believe you have the pieces right now to go and compete for a championship. You just need to continue to add. That's why I've been a proponent of extensions, restructuring, keeping the group together that you have, but making better additions in certain areas to bolster this roster as a whole. And they've been able to do some of that, and I'm excited to see the future moves that they will make. I just don't believe it's going to be in the form of a trade.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone was looking at the moves they made in 2019 with Frank Clark, thinking if you have three picks, you had four heading into the draft with Clark, maybe you can make a move. The problem is that that was something where in the moment you had enough weapons around you to try to offset what was going to happen with your defensive line. Your best two trade pieces are, like you said, Jake, Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. Problem is you don't have anyone to replace them, and not only that, but everything else is going to be offset by the movement of those two guys. That's in addition to leaving you with a lot of dead cap, particularly that $39 million with Wilson. Wilson moves on. Well, Geno Smith's a backup. He's an unrestricted free agent. You got to figure out what to do at quarterback. And if Bobby Wagner moves on, well, presumably Jordan Brooks is your middle linebacker of the future. So you're okay there. He looked promising. He's not Bobby Wagner, but you have someone that can play there. Well, then what? You got Cody Barton as your strong side linebacker. You haven't brought back KJ. You need another outside linebacker. I mean, you're in trouble there. Bobby Wagner, particularly if you don't bring back KJ, is the anchor of that linebacker group and going to be the most experienced player outside of Carlos Dunlap in your front seven as a whole. They just don't have quite the same movement chess piece that they did with a franchise tag Frank Clark back in 19.
Number two.
Washington's wide receiver room giving the basketball team a run for their money in most people entering the transfer portal. Austin Osborne and Marquise Spiker, the fourth and fifth Husky receivers to enter the transfer portal this offseason. So, is this a product of John Donovan's offensive style, or is there something else going on?
No, this is a product of John Donovan's offensive style and the way that Jimmy Lake wants to run this program. And look, I'm not knocking it. I think that you can have a dominant running game. You can play very good defense. You can build your team around good, very good dominant offensive line play. Is it harder to win that way? Yes. It is very difficult to win that way in college football. That's why you see even Nick Saban, who was a strong proponent of that style, go away from it, because it's a lot easier to win games by putting up points and taking advantage of the RPO rules and the spread offensive systems that are out there in college football today. John Donovan and Jimmy Lake are rolling the clock back. And in terms of enticing recruits at the receiver position, you're not going to do it. You might have one or two receivers that are going to get serious receptions or the opportunity to get their hands on the ball, and that's just not something that a lot of receivers around the country are going to be signing up for.
Yeah, I think it's fair to ask the question because you have UW Hoops with some guys departing. Remember Percy Allen's report saying there could be an additional four, meaning a total of six guys. And since that report came out the other week, we've still had some additional guys leave. So it's certainly getting to that number. Now, that's one I'm a little more concerned about, because with that, I don't know if it's feeling like as a player you don't have a place. And the way I'm interpreting is you think that the program isn't moving up. And that is far more concerning than a player who looks at it and says, I don't know that I can shine here with my skill set, which is what I think is happening with these UW receivers.
Number three.
Final Four weekend underway tomorrow. Gonzaga taking on the Cinderella, those plucky underdogs at UCLA, only the 11-time champions. And then Baylor taking on Houston on the other side of the bracket. So which two teams are advancing to Monday night's national championship game?
I believe that it's going to be the Zags and the Baylor Bears. Now, you know, we had Titus and Tate on, and they were talking about Houston, how they've said that they're not good this entire time, and they've made it now into the Final Four, and they're going to continue to die on that hill. Who knows? Maybe Houston is the surprise here. Maybe they're just scrappy enough to get themselves into the championship game. But I just think that when it comes down to talent, the Baylor Bears and the Guns and the Zags are just they're too talented. Head and shoulders, they are the better teams walking into these two matchups, and I believe at this point those are the two teams that should be in the finals.
Semi-related question, because I already agree with Jake on the two ones advancing. If UCLA topples the Zags, who we all had in our show bracket, do you still cheer for UCLA? Because I don't know if I can bring myself to cheer for Baylor over UCLA.
Well, I mean, I'm an Arizona alum, so I will not be cheering for UCLA at any point.
ever?
Ever.
Not even just for the health of the Pac-12.
Never.
I can't tell if that's a fair to have or an unhealthy take to have.
See,
to
this is where your UW-ness is coming into play at this stage, I could care less about the health of the Pac-12. They've done a great job.
No, you get that Final Four money.
They did a great job.
I don't care. There's too much hate on the Pac-12 still.
But is there not enough hate on the Zags? I mean, people downplay the Zags all the time.
Close.
People downplay it on the Zags all the time.
They
now they're
do,
not a
but
good
the Pac-12
enough team.
People see as a joke. The Pac-12 people on the East Coast don't pay attention to, and some of that is
done themselves
1,000%. Then earn it. I mean, start by getting a better commissioner. Thank goodness Larry Scott is out. But I'm just saying, like, it's hard for me not to want like a personal vendetta where the Pac-12 somehow wins. It'd also be a cool story from a.
Right.
First four plays.
So Stacey's rooting for UCLA in this weekend's game.
That's not what I said.
She's rooting for UCLA. We will stay true to our bracket, and we will be rooting for the Zags.
All right.
Okay.
Say what you will.
All right. I will. I 100% will say that.
Now, Curtis, who are you going for in women's?
Oh, Arizona.
Arizona.
But they got UConn tonight, which is like the most.
Yeah,
that's the most impossible task. But we're up for it. Ari McDonald.
Curtis, but are you, though? Are you up for that? I don't know.
Is Stanford still in there?
They are.
Okay.
They're playing South Carolina, which is another tall task.
Yikes.
Look, Ari McDonald is a stone cold killer, but UConn is also like the Soviet hockey team in the 1980s.
1,000%.
So, yeah.
Can we live our own truth and pretend no matter what, the Wildcats won the whole thing?
They did.
Let's go.
The tournament ends before the Final Four.
My bad. Apologies. All right. Let's keep this conversation going about the Mariners' surprise opening night win, that amazing comeback, next with Mike Salk.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Joining us now, it's Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, first of all, happy Friday. How are you?
Happy Friday. Happy day after opening day. It's a nice, beautiful day to be a Mariners fan in the city of Seattle today. I know we'll talk about the game, but just having a chance to be down there, you know, yesterday and last night, this just felt special. It was really cool to be back and see fans walking in and walk around the concourse a little bit. And, you know, things are a little strange and not everything is open and it's not exactly as it will be eventually. But just seeing people congregate again and the smiles on their face and people just excited to be together, bonding as part of a community. I just, you know, maybe it's sappy, but I just thought it was pretty special yesterday.
I was going to ask, I saw you tweet a picture outside of T-Mobile walking in. Jake and I broadcasted that morning from T-Mobile, but we all three of us, Jake, me and Curtis, watched the game from our homes. And I know that a lot of listeners watch from home because of limited capacity. So really quick, my first question is actually just what the game experience was like. I know you talked about it emotionally, but for anyone who's trying to get to a game soon, is it like you're all sitting in a group and you can't walk around? Did you keep your mask on the whole time?
No, you can walk around. I mean, you know, they don't want you. I mean, some of the seats that they don't want you using are essentially zip tied.
Okay.
Right. So you go to your seat and the seats that are not being used are zip tied shut. So they don't want people, you know, mixing and mingling and that stuff. The pen is open, but you can't stand there. And a lot of the restaurants there aren't open. And so it's not sort of your typical pen experience, which is probably for the best right now. But you can walk around the concourse. Many of the concession stands are open. People were wearing masks other than when they were specifically eating or drinking. And you know, I thought people seemed really respectful of the whole thing, excited that this was allowed again and willing to sort of, you know, deal with some of the slight imperfections or sacrifices, I guess you would say, in order to get something back that I think everyone had really missed. So, yeah, it felt very close to being normal. And no, it's not full, but, you know, when things happened that were positive, it got loud. And even 9,000 people in a building like that, you can really feel the difference in the energy.
So talk to me about the contrast of this game, because you see for basically this first seven innings of the game and you're like, this is how we're going to open this up. All the fanfare, all the excitement, all the emotion, and man, what a dud of an opening. But it turned around in a hurry, and there were actually a lot of people with a lot of stories of, man, I turned the game off, or I walked away, and I found out this morning that they had won. What was that like being there and seeing that turnaround and having the game end the way it did?
Yeah, no, I left right around the middle of the seventh, so I did not
comeback.
I did. I had to get home, kids. And,
oh, sure.
You know, I have to do a morning show.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait, I don't have to do that anymore.
No, yep.
No, you can't use that excuse.
No, that's no fun. I used to use that excuse all the time. Darn. I did come home and watch the end, though. You know, what I would say is another reminder that there is no more important position in all of sports, maybe even including quarterback, and certainly that would be the only other, you know, one you could argue, than pitcher. And while having one pitcher doesn't do as much for you as having the quarterback, you know, in each game, the pitcher is so in control of how that game is going. And last night, is Kevin Gausman a star? No. He's an okay pitcher, but he had it last night. He had it going 94, touching 97, had command of all of his pitches, kept them off balance. Mariners were swinging early, et cetera. They figured it out, and when he came out of the game, everything changed for, you know, a relief staff there in San Francisco that's just not very good, and certainly wasn't last night. But kudos to the Mariners. They were patient. They took advantage, right? They waited for their moment, stayed in the game just enough, and were able to come back and do what they needed to do. And to get three walks in the 10th like that, is it normal? No. Is that going to happen every game? No, definitely not. But for a young team to take a veteran approach in a moment like that, I think is a really, you know, I think it's a nice compliment to the type of team Scott Servais has had now for over a year. You know, he's taken young guys and gotten them to play above their years, and I think that's a really nice skill.
What single thing or moment were you most encouraged by last night?
I mean, I guess my eyes were mostly on two players, Taylor Trammell and Ty France. I just really like Ty France. I love the way the kid hits. I just love his approach at the plate. He was one of the few guys to have good at bats early off Gausman. So not a surprise that he was sort of in and around all of it. But, you know, Trammell, rookie with a lot of talent, making his first ever start in the big league, major league debut, took a big walk in a big spot and was able to lay off a couple of tough pitches. Threw a guy out at second base with a nice hose from center field. So, yeah, I think those were probably two players that caught my eye over the course of the night. And then, you know, Marco, unfortunately, you know, I like Marco Gonzalez, and if he's the number two or three pitcher on your team, I think that's great. You know, Marco Gonzalez making his third opening day start is probably not a position you want to be in. But I think what stood out to me most with him is that with the hair grown out like that, anybody else catching a little Jason Vargas vibe from him now when they show the shot from center field? Like, his body's better than Vargas, obviously, but I don't know. I just kept looking like, man, it looks like Jason Vargas pitching out there with the hair.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think our show can take credit for, Salk, is we had Anthony Misevich on.
That's our win, too.
And,
it's our win,
you know,
too.
We really kind of got him fired up and got him going. And
we gave him
and
tips.
He came in ready to go. I mean, he did his job. He shut down the side when he came in late into the game. So I think it's just a nice touch. So if you were impressed by his pitching, that our show contributed to his pregame routine.
Yeah, I mean, he shut down the 10th, right? Starts off with a runner on second base. I heard Bob and Dave talking about this yesterday and others as well. I don't like the man on second base rule. I just think it's silly. I don't know who goes to a baseball game, makes it through nine innings and says, okay, I'm about done here, so let's wrap this thing up. I don't like this anymore. Make it end quicker.
Right.
Like, I just, if you've made it that far, you love baseball and you're into it, so why not continue to just play baseball? If you want to throw a man on second base randomly, do it in the fifth inning when the game can drag a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And that's the part that also I was looking at it too from, you know, you're a Mariners fan, you're going to the top of the 10th, and you see that runner on second for the Giants, you're like, man, you got to be kidding me. This is way easier to get this done. But I want to play this cut for you because I think this is a really cool moment that we often had just kind of put onto the back burner just because out of sight, out of mind for 2 years. But here's Mitch Haniger and that amazing sliding catch he had in the 10th.
A Savage sets right by the chin. Deals. Swinging a lazy fly ball right field. Haniger having to pick up some speed near the line. He slides it. Mitch Haniger makes the catch to end the top of the 10th. What a play.
What did you make of that play when you saw it?
Yeah, it's a good one, and you're right. I mean, Mitch Haniger is still one of the most talented guys on this team. I mean, that he and Seager and France are probably the three guys that you look at and say, these are probably the three best hitters on the team. He didn't have a great night at the plate last night. But if you go back and Haniger's supposedly this five-tool guy, and he is, but he's had a few of those moments. And funny, a bunch of them have been sort of balls he's had to come in on that have just kicked off his glove or just been a little bit too short or just one, I think, even remember bouncing over his glove. And he's had actually a couple of tough adventures that have cost the team in the outfield. It's been a few years, obviously. So that's the type of play that he seems to have struggled with for whatever reason. It was really, I thought, encouraging to see him come up with that. And I'm sure he just felt good to contribute in a way. It doesn't have to be the bat every single night, but finding a way to contribute to a team win like that, I think it's got to be great for him. He's a really great dude. Every time I've been around Mitch, I really like him. He's intense. He loves the game. He seems to like it here. And so I was really excited to see him be a part of it like that last night.
He is Mike Salk. Joins us every weekday at 11:30. Thanks, Mike. Have a good weekend.
161 to go.
Let's go. All right. There's a narrative about the Seahawks and Russell Wilson that some fans are growing tired of. Gerald Everett's here to crush it. You're going to want to hear what one of the newest Seahawks said about his new team next. Do not go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
We're taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Yusei Kikuchi takes the mound tonight in Game 2 of the Mariners series against the Giants. Pre-game starts at 6 p.m. and first pitch is at 7:10 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. This hour of Jake and Stacey, by the way, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake, there's this idea that by publicly airing out one of his frustrations, that being protection, Russell Wilson has damaged relationships with his teammates and will be entering not only a hostile locker room, but also potentially keeping the Seahawks as an organization from signing some free agents that they may want to be able to sign. Because, for instance, if you're a free agent offensive lineman, why do I, a free agent guard, want to go to a place where the quarterback just called the guards out for not protecting him enough? There have been some players that have been asked about it on the spot, LJ Collier being one of those guys, KJ Wright, Quandre Diggs. In fact, let's go ahead and run through what they had to say. Let's start with Collier. He was asked, I believe, on Good Morning Football what he had to think about the Russ rumors.
Not buying it at all. Russ is Seattle, man. He's got a quarterback and he's a winner, man. I'm not buying it. I think they're going to do what they need to do. And Russ is going to be our quarterback for years to come, man. I don't see him going anywhere. He's a great guy. He's our leader, man. He's our quarterback. I don't see anybody being in the center for a while. So, yeah, that's my take on it.
Now, Quandre Diggs was asked specifically, more specifically, not just about the trade rumors, but what did you think about Russell Wilson coming out and actually critiquing something about his team? It's weird to see. This guy's towed the company line for 9 years now, and then he comes out and says this. This is what Quandre had to say. In cut 14.
Now Russ has come out of his shell more because he's comfortable and he knows he's one of the best to do it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I just think now it's just the evolution that he's going through, and some people like it, some people don't like it. But, I mean, it's a player-driven league, and he's doing what he has to do. But, I mean, I think Russ is going to be a Seahawk. I think he wants to be a Seahawk, and I know we all want him to be a Seahawk. So, I just think, you know what I mean? He's talking his talk now, just like how Jamal talks his talk, the way I talk my talk, you know what I mean? He's just, you know what I mean? He's being him, and people not used to seeing him, and you know what I mean? I just think he's confident in himself, he's confident in his abilities, and he's letting it be shown now.
Jake, more recently you had one other player talk about this. What did he say, and what do you make of it?
Well, you had Gerald Everett that came up and stepped up as well, and you had KJ Wright who, you know, let's not forget in cut number 15, KJ Wright talked about, you know, Russ and how, in his view, he ain't going anywhere. And if he's going to be here in Seattle, he wants Russ as his quarterback.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of caught off guard myself, but, you know, looking back at it, Russ isn't going anywhere. As long as I'll be in Seattle, Russ is going to be the quarterback. And he means too much to us. He means way too much to this organization. He means way too much to this city. And usually people want to come to Seattle, not leave Seattle. And so I'm sure that him and the organization to get things figured out, he's somebody that, you know, I admire and love playing with. And so I expect Russ to be a Seahawks for a very long time.
And most recently, you had Gerald Everett, who was a free agent. One of the things was everyone's concerned about, you know, the ability to attract free agents here to Seattle because of the comments that Russ made, whether that was offensive line, whether that was other skill positions. And, you know, here in cut number 11, Gerald Everett saying, look, part of the reason I wanted to be here was to play with a guy like Russ.
You know, I just wanted to take the best offer. And I feel like a lot of times monetary might not be the best option. It might more so be the pieces that are already on the team. An example like a Russell Wilson, you know, I wasn't able to play with a quarterback like Russ up to this point in my career. You know, I've had a different quarterback each place I've been. So, you know, to be able to play with a guy like Russ's caliber is really exciting.
So, I mean, the reason why I think this is important is because that has been a strong narrative. That has been a strong conversation that has happened and transpired through all of this in this offseason. We have had plenty of evidence from guys, starters in this on this team, guys that have come into this, and Gabe Jackson, when talking to the media, you know, the excitement that him and Russell share together to play together. I think that all that goes to show that everything within that locker room is stable. Everything within that locker room, there is an understanding, and to me, that is one of the worries that I would, if I'm on the outside, that's the first worry that I have with all of this. And I think that people are right to point to that. Man, is this going to cause waves with his teammates? And so I think it's really good to see that we have mounting evidence that that isn't the case, and that right now you're in a position where you have Russell Wilson, who is talking positively about, you know, the signings that the Seahawks are making. You currently are not hearing any more conversation about Russell Wilson, the Seahawks, and trade conversations. You don't hear Adam Schefter talking about, oh, I don't know, guys. I mean, wait till the draft.
Give him a week.
No, yeah, give him a week just before before we get going here. But in all seriousness, that has really died off. And so you talk about the state of the union for Russell, his teammates, and the Seahawks. I think things are in a much better position right now, and I'm hoping that continues to move forward. And you know, all those people that were out there and had those concerns, I think you can take a sigh of relief. And if you're still holding on to those concerns, then I think you just want something to be wrong. Right now, we have all the evidence in the world that there's nothing out there for anybody to be worried about at this point in time. And I think everybody is on the same page. I think everybody, especially, you know, teammate-wise, understand where Russ was coming from and how they're moving forward together.
Now, I believe that there are plenty of people in the locker room that didn't have an issue with it. I'm not fully convinced that there aren't some people who were rubbed the wrong way, only because there's a ton of people in the locker room, and it's just hard for me to assume that someone in an interview where the number one team rule is don't disparage the team would ever say anything. That said, I think that these are mature men who can work it out and talk it out. And the only thing that keeps me from thinking that there's not going to be a problem during the season is the fact that some of this happened during the season. That according to that article in The Athletic, that meeting that Russell Wilson was in where he reportedly stormed out happened in like November, and we never heard about it until months later. So I'm at least confident that worst case scenario, if some players are having an issue with this, I don't know if you're going to see it on the field, because all kinds of weird stuff happens during the season. All kinds of fights break out. All kinds of arguments are had. You don't hear about it until months later.
Well, just like KJ said, I don't think you have anybody that's festering over this. KJ Wright, what was his initial response? Whoa, I was not expecting that. That caught me off guard. But what I do believe is that when you have time to think about it, ponder it, or even call Russell himself and ask him, like, hey, what's going on here? I think you have an opportunity to, you know, talk things through and talk it out and get on the same page and move forward and understand where guys are coming from. So I think all of that happens in the offseason quicker, and hopefully we're in a position. Tom Pelissero, you know, kind of teased it out that we are going to have some form of actual practice, actual OTAs or mandatory mini camp, whatever the case may be, this spring. And I think that would be an extremely positive thing for this group to all get together and be back in the facility.
All right. You guys know him. You love him. It's Michael Bumpus. He joins us every single Friday. That continues next at noon.